Welcome to episode 13 of That's What Bea Said, brought to you by Fansided. I am your host, Brittany Mollis, and I'm joined by the super talented Meredith Cabe at MK on Sports. How are you, Meredith?
I'm doing great, Brittany. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm just peachy. Bree is off tonight, so we invited someone very special to fill in. Please welcome back our very dear friend Caitlin from Crunch Time with Caitlin. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm excited to be here. Am I the righty out of the bullpen, or am I just like one of the utility players off the bench? Am I the Jamie Carroll of the That's What Bea Said?
Is that a baseball player?
That is a baseball player.
Listen, Brittany stopped watching baseball in 1997. Like, that's what you have to remember.
Wait, hold on. No, in 2010, okay? Actually, okay. No, I watched in 2013. I watched, I watched a little bit in 2016, too, and 2017. But, like, you know, I wasn't devoted anymore. I haven't been devoted for a long time.
So I should have said Mike Avila's then.
Yes.
Remember Mike Avila's Cavs? Do you guys remember that?
Remember the Twitter account dedicated to it?
There was a Twitter for it?
Yeah.
Caitlin, was it yours?
It was
Did
not
you
mine.
Run the Mike Avila's Cavs Twitter?
It was not mine, because at the time I was just feuding with Indians Twitter at that point.
Do you still? You do.
Indians Twitter feuds with Indians Twitter.
Oh,
like,
God.
People on Indians Twitter could literally agree with each other and still be at each other's throats. Like, it is a phenomenon.
Yeah, it's like everyone needs to outsmart everyone. Like, everyone has to be the smartest person in the room when it comes to baseball Twitter. That's what it is.
Yeah, and then they try to act like they're smarter than the analytics team that actually works for the Indians.
Yes, or like if you don't get one thing exactly correct, like if you're in the ballpark, pun intended, you know, it doesn't matter. You have to be, like, exact with saying things. And it's just like, my God, I can't imagine how these people have any real-life friends. Like, they are unbearable as humans.
I just like seeing the world burn, you know what I mean? So
I actually
That's why we love you.
There is baseball in the rundown tonight because Caitlin and I have to settle something.
I'm excited.
We're calling
excited.
It the Great Debate. And it's a doozy.
I forgot to pop my popcorn.
Yeah, well, it's okay. Meredith, you know, we're going to need you to... Actually, you could be the tiebreaker here.
Okay. I've got rice cakes. I can use my rice cakes instead of popcorn.
I love it. All right. So, first things first, you know, obviously, we have to talk about Coach of the Year, Kevin Stefanski. Over the weekends... Did they have a ceremony? Because I was so busy relaxing on Saturday that I didn't even watch anything. Was there like an actual ceremony?
Sort of. So they had a TV show. I guess they put it on TV, but then everyone did their thanks virtually. So there was literally like, it almost looked like a hologram, but it was just like the, from the chest up. Cutout of Kevin Stefanski like in the corner holding the award saying his thanks. It was very weird. Like the NFL got a lot of things right with doing things virtually this year, but the NFL honors, like I couldn't do it. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna look at the results when they come out, because you know everyone is tweeting them coming out.
That's why I didn't watch anything. I was watching something stupid. It's probably Mindy. And I was just like,
I mean,
refreshing.
I always watch better than projects. The NFL honors.
Yeah, because I was like, you know, I'll see it when it comes through on the Twitter, and it did. And you know, of course, I jumped all over it.
But
I want to talk about what an incredible achievement this is, given the circumstances. So, number one, he joined a historically terrible franchise as a rookie head coach. He did it in a shortened off season due to COVID. There were no preseason games, limited in-person practice, COVID difficulties throughout the season. There was all new staff, all new players, led them to a 12-4 regular season record and into the second round of the playoffs. So I got to ask you guys, and I'll let you both answer, what do we think made Kevin Stefanski so successful here? Meredith, you can go first.
I think the biggest thing was the culture change. So I There, I was told this thing by someone who used to play offensive line for the 49ers. And he told me, and this has stuck with me, that when he got to the 49ers, Kyle Shanahan came in and he said the culture was like changed the minute he walked in the room, because that was kind of a sloppy, disorganized, locker room was lost kind of culture out in San Francisco. And then they hired Kyle Shanahan, and he was like, the minute that guy walked in the room, like, you knew it was time to work. And I think that's what Kevin Stefanski brought to the Browns. Like, he walked in and everyone's like, oh, like, he just commanded respect. He got the players to buy in to his system. And I think that's probably the most important part, is that the players believed him and wanted to play for him. And yeah, just this entire culture shift went from, you know, these loser 0-16 Browns to look out, they could be in the Super Bowl within the next year or two. I mean, and that's what happened to the 49ers. Like, they went to the Super Bowl. So I have so much hope for this team, and I'm so excited, and I'm so glad that we were right about Kevin Stefanski. This is just like, I don't ever want to stop taking victory laps about Kevin Stefanski.
Do we ever have to? Like, no. I'm just going to keep doing it until I die, I think.
Like, here's the thing. When the Browns win the Super Bowl, we should be leading the parade.
Yes. Like, why not? We earned that right. We earned it.
I know. The people who were pro Kevin Stefanski from day one. From day zero, from like even before he was hired, that was all of our
even
choice.
Before. Caitlin, were you like Team Stefanski from the beginning, or was there someone else that was your favorite for the job?
So I went back and, you know, looked at all my tweets, and I was Team Josh McDaniels, but I was like, if we're just going to bring him in, he's going to bring in his own guy, and you're going to have alignment when it comes to Josh McDaniels. Now, obviously, if you bring in Kevin Stefanski, Paul DePodesta finally gets his guy. You know, I mean, he wanted Sean McDermott the first time in Buffalo. He wanted Stefanski, or when Hugh Jackson was fired, McDermott went to Buffalo. He wanted Stefanski the year before. He obviously lost that power struggle to John Dorsey. So, you know, I was just for alignment. Like, can we all get, you know, to, you know, can we go to the same, can we go the same direction, please? You know what I mean? And I think that kind of piggybacking off of what Meredith said, just the trust between front office and head coach, the trust between head coach and his staff. I mean, think of any other team losing their head coach in their first playoff game in 17 years, however long it was.
We lost count.
And you go out there, you go out there, and for the first time in 16 years, you win, you beat a division rival, you beat basically one of the gold standards of the NFL. I mean, without your head coach, but because everybody's, you know, working, everybody has the same goals. Everybody's going, you know, they know what they're doing. And it sounds so stupid, but that's how low the bar is in Cleveland. I mean, and then you look even when the bye week came, the change with the offense, you know, putting Baker in more, comfortable sets and actually, you know, building upon a passing game with Alex Van Pelt. I mean, it's just, you know, that's the biggest key, I think. And I think that was the main key for all the success was, you know, you have these guys, they're finally, you know, you have alignment. You have everybody working towards one goal. You know, there is no alternative motive, you know. Eventually, hopefully, you know, you hope your guys like Joe Woods or Alex Van Pelt will get a head coaching opportunity in the future. But, you know, nobody's, you know, we don't have a Todd Haley situation trying to backdoor get a head coaching job while he's working for Hugh Jackson, you know, and calling that offense. And then you end up having, you know, both of them fired. And I mean, we all know the story, but it's
those
finally
really were the days though, weren't they? Like, that was so much fun to live through.
You want to know, you know, what's funny. I even said, like, I missed the chaos of like a head coaching search. You know, like, who are we interviewing today? Oh, is this guy going to fit what we have? Do we need a quarterback? We don't need a quarterback. We could just sit back. We were like,
yeah, it's
one
like,
of
what do? We just talk about the
10 teams. Yeah.
Like, I mean, at this point, we don't even need to talk about the draft because the Browns don't even pick until 26.
Yeah.
I know.
We talk about, like, what,
and of course,
what
the draft is in Cleveland.
Yeah, the draft is in Cleveland this year. It's, man, I really hope that things are, like, pandemic-wise are calmed down by then, because it's just, I think one of the tough things with going after, was it Nashville last year or was it Vegas last year?
Vegas last year.
Right. So it was Nashville the year before that. So I think one of the things that made me nervous about holding the draft in Cleveland is that Nashville was literally a party. I think my favorite thing about the Nashville draft was like all the bachelorette parties that,
yes,
you know, these women don't watch football, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not your thing, but they like weren't aware that the draft was that weekend. So they scheduled their bachelorette party, and then like the entire Broadway, which is where all the honky tonks are, is just completely shut down. For the draft,
and,
like,
and it's funny, they probably just thought like, oh, these prices are expensive because it's Nashville.
Yeah, exactly.
They know that it's because of the NFL draft, everything skyrocketed.
Exactly. So the part that made me nervous for it being in Cleveland is that Nashville was a crazy party and Las Vegas was a crazy party, and I was worried that whoever is organizing the activities for Cleveland would try to top that. And the thing is that Cleveland is such a different city than Vegas. It is such a different city than Nashville that the way you make it great is to make it uniquely Cleveland. Because I think that's one of the things that made the All-Star game when Major League Baseball did their All-Star game here in like what, 2018, 2019. Like that was such a phenomenal weekend because Major League Baseball did everything they could to make it unique to Cleveland. And so that's what I wanted to see, or what I want to see out of this NFL draft. Like people are going to compare it to the year before, like, oh my God, this is what it was like in Nashville. And like Cleveland isn't Nashville. Like you're not going to walk down the street on a Wednesday night and be able to play Count the Bachelorette party, which we used to do when I lived in Nashville. Like my friends and I, we would go to a bar and we would take like extra shots every time a new bachelorette party walked in. We only played that game once because we almost wound up in the hospital. But, like, yeah. It's like Nashville's the bachelorette party and bachelor party too. Like, I don't think I used my dating. Like, I was not swiping on Bumble because every time I would swipe on a guy, it was just someone in town for a bachelor party. Like, it was annoying. So,
oh my gosh. Caitlin, have you ever used Bumble?
No comment.
Have you ever used Tinder, any dating app at all?
No.
Well, me neither. Mm-hmm. No, actually, I was on something for like 12 hours once, but literally after 12 hours,
I've done that.
I've
done that, and I was like, "What are we doing?"
Yes.
Like we're just gonna stop.
Oh no. Yeah.
Oh my God. So I have Hinge, and you get notifications when someone swipes on you on Hinge. But at some point, the app like logged me out. And I don't remember my username or password, and I don't really give a shit. But I keep getting notifications of people, like, matching and sending me comments. I'm like, I can't see it. I can't log in. Like, I don't care.
Oh, gosh. All right, ladies. We need to take a break to talk about something very important. Are you ready?
Oh, so ready.
Are you ready, Caitlin?
I'm just waiting here.
She's terrified. It's okay.
Let's have a chat about a little thing called romance. Valentine's Day is coming up. Don't you want to surprise your lady with something smooth? Something
you know you do.
Something sensual. Something she'll want to tell her girlfriends about.
And you know we will.
It is time for Manscaped, fellas. Support for That's What Bea Said is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. We have an exclusive offer for our listeners. 20% off plus free shipping with the code BSAID at manscaped.com. Ladies, you want to hear a little bit more about Manscaped?
Let's
Are
do
you
it.
Ready?
Absolutely.
Oh my
okay,
God, I'm
I have
so
some
ready.
Information. I have some information for all of you. All right. So, Manscaped has created the best ball hair trimmer ever, the Lawnmower 3.0. There were two before it. There were two before it. I guess they weren't, you know, they needed
so
a third.
So we had multiple. Is it shaped like a lawnmower?
What if... So, their
okay,
third,
fellas,
their third
would you,
generation
would you shave your balls?
Let me get through this, please. We need to get through this. Their third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. In addition, this trimmer comes with an LED light.
I mean, you really have to see what you're doing there.
Whoa!
You don't want to miss a spot, okay?
Can you put,
and that
like,
LED light.
Designs in it?
The LED light is going to help you so you don't miss a spot. Because nothing is worse than just a patch that you missed.
That would like the Drew Gooden patch. Remember when he had that patch in the back of his head?
Oh my god. Yes! Oh my god.
Okay, so with the LED light, it provides a more precise shave and is waterproof to make your shower shave clean and easy. And don't use the same trimmer you use on your face as your balls. That's just nasty. The Lawnmower 3.0 comes inside their brand new Perfect Package 3.0, which comes with everything you need to keep trimmed, cut-free, and smelling nice down there. The Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0 also includes the Crop Preserver. These names are killing me.
I'm picturing a weed whacker with an LED light.
The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? Oh my
yes, God. Your balls do stink.
Yeah, they do. So Manscaped threw in two free gifts into their perfect package, a pair of high-performance Manscaped boxer briefs that'll keep your junk feeling fresh all day, and a travel shed bag to store all your grooming goodies. Trim that junk of yours, guys. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BSAID at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. And use code BSAID. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. All right.
All right.
So what you're saying is you could look like Eric Snow, Drew Gooden, or Scott Pollard. Is that what you're basically talking about?
The range, Caitlin. The range.
I mean, it's important. Like, I'm sure those boxers are super important. Because, I mean, I don't know about you ladies, but when you wax something, you have to make sure that you take care of it so you don't get ingrowns. So if you got these nice flowy boxers, after you trimmed your balls, it'll help with avoiding ingrowns.
Ooh,
on your balls.
You know what? The more you know. I didn't know about any of this.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Congratulations to you guys, because every giant podcast has this ad. So good for you guys getting that bread.
Giant. Woo!
Do your thing.
I was supposed
you know
to
mean?
Read that in a minute or less, so that went about 4 minutes over what it was
I mean,
supposed to.
We are giving them, they paid for 60 seconds, and we gave them four, so we are generous.
A lot of good stuff in that one. Yes. All right. Back to Browns. So, what do you guys think the Cleveland Browns have to do to experience repeated success next season? Caitlin. I'm going to let you sound off in a second, too.
Get better players on defense. Defense.
It's just that simple.
You know, it was rough. And, you know, I think we all called it. The one issue, the one thing that was going to hold this team back was the defense, and that's exactly what happened. So, just...
Okay, so quick question, though, before we get to Meredith's answer, because I have this, and it's just, like, a nice transition right now. I was going to let you sound off about the Browns defense, because this has been, like, a talking point between us, you know, between me and you, or you and Bree, or whoever, like, all season. And if I remember correctly, I think it was a couple weeks ago, like probably right after the Browns season ended, we were getting into whether Joe Woods should be given another year or not. And you are you're firmly on the camp that, you know, that's probably not the best idea, correct?
Yeah. At the time, see, this is my thought process. Historically awful anything should get you fired. The Browns gave up 27 out of 32 chances on fourth down conversions, their defense. That is ridiculous. Like, I don't understand how, like, I understand not having the players, right? And one of the reasons why I say, hey, you know, you can fire him this year, because, you know, I looked at the roster from that last game against the Chiefs. There are only 7 players that I expect to be back week one next year. I expect Garrett, obviously, Ward, Harrison, Taki Taki, Jacob Phillips, Adrian Claiborne, and potentially Sheldon Richardson. He's got to take a pay cut. He's due like $13.3 million. So they got to restructure that somewhere, because it's just not going to happen, especially with the lower cap this year. So you have kind of this built-in excuse if you wanted to say, you know what, we just didn't like what we saw. But, I mean, I also understand, like, you know, it was a tough year. You had a lot of injuries. I mean, it's just frustrating, because it was either, to me, there's two answers to the defensive problem from last year. It was, one, was the scheme not good enough for, was the scheme not just good enough? Did they not really adjust to what they had, you know, with the injuries and all that stuff? Or was it that Andrew Berry just didn't do a good job, you know, building enough depth and put too many eggs in the Greedy Williams, in the Grant Delpit basket? And I don't know. I mean, that's it's just tough. It's just tough.
But how,
I mean,
much
I see,
different
I don't want to fire
would,
him.
How
I mean,
much different
ideally,
would it have been if Sendejo wasn't the guy? You know, if they actually had, like, guys that were supposed to be there, guys that were supposed to be on the field every Sunday, what if they were there? And do you think Joe Woods would have done a good job with it? Or do you just think there's a problem with him?
I think, well, that's the question, you know. And I guess that's what the Browns are just banking on. Hey, you know, it was just, you know, you're missing some key guys. But it's also like, why are we putting so much weight in Grant Delpit, a second-round rookie? You know, why is he the be-all-end-all to our team? You know, why is our linebacking core B.J. Goodson and 51 and a rookie Jacob Phillips and Taki Taki, you know, like,
you forgot about 2-3.
Yeah, well, you know, I was getting there. There. He's part of the I never want to see him on the field ever again. But it's just like, you know, it took 51 getting hurt in late in training camp for them to just bring in a veteran like Malcolm Smith. You know, it unfortunately they didn't get Andrew Billings because he opted out, and he would have been a big help on the defensive line, especially on early downs, when it comes to the running game. And I think if you give the Browns offense mulligans for the Raiders game, Houston, and the Eagles, well, then you kind of have to criticize, you know, the defense, and you got to think, well, that defense isn't as good, because, I mean, imagine a nice, beautiful day, and they're going up against Deshaun Watson and Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks. Like they couldn't stop anybody. It really did take those bad weather games to win, you know. You know, just to win the game. And then you have a game like, you know, Vegas, where they come into your house and play your style of football and just run right into you. And you get basically get blown out that game. You lose a time of possessions. You give up close to, you know, 250 rushing yards on the ground. I mean, that was your type of game. And, you know, I mean, Vegas, I mean, Josh Jacobs is good. Booker, their backup running back, is good. But, I mean, that's the game that you expect to win. So.
I've already forgotten every single thing about the Raiders. Like, I don't even everything. That might be, like, the most forgettable team in the NFL, I think. And, like, we lost.
Yeah, we lost.
So
pretty badly,
okay,
too.
Yeah. So I'm willing to give Joe Woods one more year. And the reason why is because this team is very young. And there's a lot of really good years ahead of them. Like, if we were looking at this team and saying, okay, the window is closing, to make it to a Super Bowl, to potentially win a Super Bowl, I would say probably fire Joe Woods right now. But the window is just opening. Like, I know the Browns are going to have to worry about Baker Mayfield's contract and Nick Chubb's contract and Denzel Ward's contract. Like, they're going to have to worry about that all at the same time. But they do have the option to franchise tag Baker if they're not ready to give him a long-term contract. Like, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt are going to be very good for at least another 5 years. You know, Denzel Ward, still same class as Baker. So it's just like the star key players on the team are young and they're like, and they're hungry. So I don't look at this as the Browns have one or two more years. I would say at this point, the Browns window for making it and winning a Super Bowl is probably up to 5 years. And so that's why, because there were just so many things working against the defensive side of the ball this year. And like Caitlin said, you don't know if it was on the personnel or if it was on Joe Woods or if it was, it's not going to be on Andrew Berry. I'm not even going to say that. But I trust Andrew Berry to really find someone in the offseason and to draft the right people. And hopefully the, you know, people like Greedy Williams and Grant Delpit will be back on the field. But because of how young this team is, I think they have time. So I'm willing to give Joe Woods one more year. I'm willing to give Andrew Berry the time to find the free agents, to draft the people that they need, to give the guys who were injured time to recover, to give Joe Woods a fully healthy defensive staff that he was expecting. And if he still can't do anything with it, then at that point, you know that it was Joe Woods' fault. So I think that the personnel is the easier fix right now. And so I say fix that. Then see how Joe Woods handles it. If he can't, then he's clearly not the right guy. And if he does, then look at that. You don't have to worry about firing and hiring more personnel. So I think Joe Woods deserves at least one more year.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, if next year there's not, you know, a big improvement, then, you know, it's time to probably explore different options. But, you know, I felt like he was sort of given a tough hand this year. And there was a lot working against him. Not just, you know, people getting injured and stuff, but again, like the same problems that Stefanski had as far as, you know, the limited practice time, the no preseasons to get your stuff together, like you're coming to a new, like this is all new. So you got to give these guys a little bit of wiggle room. Now, obviously, Kevin Stefanski went above and beyond, you know, expectations. Not our expectations, but most expectations. And not everyone's Kevin Stefanski, but you know, this Joe Woods, I'm all for giving him another year. If, you know, it's more of the same, if they're still having the same kind of problems, if they're still, you know, struggling this way, even with, you know, talent and health, then there's a definite problem and I'm all for canning him at that point. But I think there are steps that you could take before, you know, something that costs someone their job. That's all I'm feeling.
I don't know. Give Joe Woods another year.
I don't know, third and long to Chad Henne, third and long to Trace McSorley. I mean,
listen, nobody saw that coming. Nobody saw that coming.
Yeah, but it, I mean, that it's a scheme. It's you got like week 16 against the Jets, you're still having defensive breakdowns in the secondary. Like, is that on the coaching or is that just on the players? You know what I mean? Like 23, like, and what are you doing? Like, you're supposed to be on the field.
He never knew what he was doing.
As the veteran, you're supposed to be on the field as a veteran to know what you're doing, yet you don't know what you're doing. What are we doing? Why are you on the field?
Listen.
What is
listen.
Back next year? Is he there?
I hope not. But here's the thing. He wasn't expected to even come off the bench at all this year. Like, he was planning on sitting his narrow little butt on the bench, collecting $11 million and cheering his teammates on from the sidelines. Like, that was his that was his 2020 plans. Injuries.
I do have a question. Like, his contract was, like, 2.5. Where is this $11 million?
I think that's like career, I think, is the number that pulling up. But either way, he's making seven figures to sit on the bench and cheer for his teammates. Like those were his plans for 2020, and then they got completely rocked by COVID.
But he came in to like teach, right? And to help people and get people lined
listen,
up
Caitlin,
when he was on the
listen,
field
Caitlin.
And he couldn't even do that. Like, what
listen,
are we
Caitlin,
doing?
I hate
you,
this
you
saying,
made Mike,
but those...
You had Mike Glennon looking like a Pro Bowl quarterback, a starting quarterback in the NFL for 3.5 quarters, and good thing that he became Mike Glennon, the normal Mike Glennon, in that fourth quarter, because we ended up barely winning that game. Like, listen, what are we doing?
I hate this saying, but those who can do, those who can't teach. And Andrew Sandejo can't do either. So cut him.
The only thing he was good at was hitting our own players late.
Listen, he was also very good at growing out his mustache.
Oh my god.
Okay, question for you guys. Gun to your head. You have to keep one.
Oh no.
Are you keeping 5-1? Or are you keeping
Sandejo? That's an easy one. Oh, that's easy. I'm keeping Mac. Easily.
Can I just take the bullet?
No, you can't just die, Caitlin.
Look, I'll take my chances that I can survive.
You have to take one.
She's going to take her chances. She's going to take her chances at the Cleveland Clinic.
Yeah, 1,000%. I've put my bets in them before. I'm going to do it again.
I'm pretty sure they're known for their cardiovascular health, not the removing a bullet from your skull health.
Hey. It's, I guess 51 because he's young.
Yes. Okay?
I guess. Yes! Oh, that, I guess.
See, you say that, and
but
we
he's under. He's already under contract.
Caitlin is now he's a fan. Caitlin is
no,
number
I'm,
one fan.
Yeah, there you go. You know breaking what? News on that's what I B hope, said. Caitlin is a I huge hope. Fan of Mac.
That's
going
to be the title of this episode.
Oh my!
Caitlin the one 5-1.
Because he's already under contract for like $3. Okay, that's it.
Listen, it's the Andrew Berry special. We love the Andrew Berry specials. I think at this point, like, I think Kareem Hunt will take an Andrew Berry special for the rest of his career if it means that he can stay on a winning team. I am telling you.
Do you think Andrew Berry would have drafted him?
Kareem Hunt? No, I don't think.
No, not Kareem Hunt. Mac Wilson.
Oof. I don't
In
think
In the fifth
so.
Round, maybe.
Yeah, like if it was one of the higher drafts, because for the past few years, the Browns have had, you know, top 10 picks. I think last year was the first year where we had to wait until like halfway through the first round to get a pick. So, yeah, maybe if it was like a super late round and he got it on a good deal, but first or second round, he's not taking Mac Wilson.
Listen, maybe he's going to have a breakout year next year.
He might,
I'm
and if
really,
he does,
I'm pulling
I hope,
for him
cause that
so
linebacker,
hard.
I mean, I might be a better linebacker than some of those guys. Like, and that's actually
How
something.
Tall are you?
I'm 5'2", dude.
Oh, gosh.
Me too!
You what guys if we make played, me like... look like a giant.
What, like, so Bree is like 5'1". She says she's 5'1". I think she's shorter than 5'1". So if you have Bree at like 5'1", in quotes... Me and Caitlin at 5'2". Like, there it is. There's your secondary right there.
There you go. What more do they need? You guys already... Well, no. Bree has the pants.
Well, that's true. I mean, here's the thing. If they have two arms and two legs, the Browns are probably interested in them when it comes to defense. Especially defensive back. Especially corner. So you know, Greedy only has 1.5 arms. So it's like, you know,
kind of
tough.
Oh, poor Greedy.
So I know, I see that you put Richard Sherman on the rundown, Britt.
Yeah.
I would not be upset if Andrew Berry found a way to get J.J. Watt. Like, because here's the
Listen,
thing. I know I said...
I saw your boy the other day.
Which one?
We call him Tugboat. He reported that the Browns were close to getting J.J. Watt, I believe.
Oh, the Titanic?
The Titanic!
He is not my boy. Let's be straight.
The streets are talking.
He is... Oh, Brittany, don't you dare. Don't you dare with your fake sources over here.
Per source.
The mean streets of what? Where do you live?
Westlake.
Somewhere rich. Who knows?
Like, okay, so the reason I say J.J. Watt is because the Texans came out and said specifically, we're not sure about the future of J.J. Watt. And then I think their, like, president or something resigned today. Like, that team is literally falling apart. Deshaun Watson wants out. They're not letting him out. But if they don't want to pay J.J. Watt and he becomes available, Andrew Berry has got to make a move for him. I don't think that Richard Sherman has much life left in him. And I know I said the Browns window is probably 4 to 5 years at this point. But if you bring in J.J. Watt and he plays the way J.J. Watt is supposed to play, like, that, your window is next year. Like, that is a win now move. So I am like, give up the draft picks. Who cares? Give up everyone on the secondary except for, you know, Miles and Denzel. I don't care. Like, do what you can do to get J.J. Watt. Like, if we're looking at veteran free agents, he's number one on my big board.
Yeah, I think the only issue is $17 million. He's 32.
Yeah.
He does have injury issues. And I feel like you could end up having the issue with Olivier Vernon and Miles, where you never had them both peak at the same time and both be healthy. You know, like last year, or, you know, this past season, Miles Garrett, awesome, gets COVID, but then Vernon starts playing lights out. And then you're starting to see it towards the end of the year, especially in that game against Pittsburgh to clinch the playoff spot. And then, unfortunately, Olivier Vernon tears his Achilles. And, you know, you just never seen them both. Even last year, again, with Freddie Kitchens, like, you just never saw them both peak at the same time, which is just, it's just super unfortunate. I think the two guys I would love, Lattimore from New Orleans.
Ooh, you're gonna have to pay him. I like that name.
I would, mm-hmm. you know, New Orleans, they're in cap hell. But if you can get him, you're gonna have to pay him. He's due $10 million this year. He'll be unrestricted next year. So this all pans with, you're gonna pay him next year, probably $15-16 million, but whatever. It doesn't even matter. Or free agent from Tampa Bay, Shaq Barrett. We saw the impact that he had in the Super Bowl. The last 2 years, he's been one of the best pass rushers in the league. I'd rather have Lattimore to pair with Ward, because I think you can have a rookie defensive end opposite of Miles Garrett and have your corners lock up. You know, giving your defensive ends just a little bit more time, you know, to get to the quarterback, rather than, you know, two guys where two veteran defensive pass rushers, where it's still going to take you, what, 2 seconds, 2.5 seconds to just get into the quarterback's face, where if you at least have really good veteran corners, and veteran meaning playing, because they're not old, you know, Marshawn's 24 and Ward's 23, so, you know, but you know what they are, and they're Pro Bowl type caliber players. And it also gives you some insurance for Denzel Ward, who, you know, he does get hurt, and Greedy is obviously a question mark, because, you know, with a nerve injury, you just don't know. So I think those are my two guys I would absolutely love.
I like it.
I love those names. But yeah, with J.J. Watt, I agree with you about the salary and the age. That's why I say it's a win now move. Like, if they're going to bring in J.J. Watt, it's got to be on a 1 year deal. Yeah, and if he doesn't make an impact in that 1 year, you just let him go. So, but still, how much fun would that be to have J.J. Watt going against T.J. Watt twice a year?
That would be fun. And you know what? At this point, I wish that Houston would just let all these guys go.
I feel like at this point,
you know what? We got to start over. You guys all deserve better than what you've been getting the past couple. All of you, even the scrubs, even like the third string, you still deserve better than what we've been giving you. I'm just going to start over clean. Everyone goes. We'll try this again. But, you know,
they just need to move the franchise
somewhere. Yeah. Like I know that.
Like, I know that Houston is one of the 10 biggest cities in the country, but they don't deserve a football team. The ownership group for the Texans have just proven that they don't deserve their shiny new, like, it's like if you buy a toddler a shiny new toy and the first thing they do is smash it against the wall. You don't want to buy that toddler another toy because they're destructive. Like, the ownership group for the Texans literally just, I mean, it's not shiny and new because it's been there for a while, but like, they literally just took it and said, okay, we're gonna smash it against the wall. Like, no,
it's bad. Well, didn't they get what's his face, the Nick something, that was like tied into to McDaniels back when he was interviewing for the Browns?
Nick Caserio. Weird. Caserio. He was like an assistant in New England, and he was tied with McDaniels for the Cleveland job last year. He was supposed to be his handpicked GM.
Yeah,
yeah, and you've got your starting quarterback stirring up shit on social media because he says, I want to be traded. And then they say, well, we're not going to trade you. So then he unfollows everything on socials. And then he randomly starts. I think he was convinced that he could get to Washington because he like followed the Washington football social accounts from like Twitter and Instagram.
I mean,
and
then they should 100%.
They like, should.
Oh my gosh, that would be wonderful. Like,
I don't know if he's still following them, but like that's what he was doing. He was just like stirring up shit on social media because it's like
I would too. Like, imagine being Deshaun Watson and like you're so good and you're on this team that just continues to hold you back, no matter how good you are. And like I said this before. Like, he was in like the top of so many statistics last year on a terrible team, and it's like, yeah, this guy just goes out there and does his job every week and he deserves so much more than what he's getting. So why wouldn't, like, shame on them for not entertaining this idea. If he asked for a trade, he deserves a trade. He gave you everything. He gives you everything every Sunday.
Well, plus there,
I don't even know how he gets motivated to do it.
Yeah, I mean, and plus they could trade him to a team like the Jets or, you know, a team that has one of those high draft picks, and they could go after a quarterback in the draft, you know? So it's, there are options. I don't know why they're hanging on to him so tightly. Like, it's just, you know, when you're on the playground and you've got the only working Tamagotchi left, and I just dated myself with that reference, but like, you don't play with this Tamagotchi because you keep smashing your Tamagotchis against the wall. And then you still have this one that's, like, hanging on for dear life, but you don't want to give it up, even though everyone on the playground is saying, like, hey, give it to us. We'll take care of it. Like, I want a Tamagotchi. I want yours. And I'm going to make sure that I, like, feed it and clean up after it and give it a loving home. It's going to grow up to be a big, scary monster.
Tamagotchi.
Deshaun Watson is a Tamagotchi or whatever toy is popular among fifth graders right now. I don't know.
Do they still make those?
I don't know.
I'm going to have... I want one now. I haven't had a Tamagotchi in so long.
I'm
Googling it. Let's see.
You might get one off of eBay. I think my mom might still have the one. I never got a Tamagotchi. We weren't fancy. I got the knockoff version.
Oh, you got like the Nano Pets and the Giga Pets?
Yes. Yeah, I had a Giga Pet.
We got the poor people special.
Yes.
All the rich kids. That's kind of like Apple phones and like Samsung. Like, all the rich kids had the Tamagotchis, and then, like, you know, they have the Apple, and then we just graduated into different technologies.
That's
so, like,
true.
Poor people still have Samsung. And, you know, I had the Giga Pets and the Nano Pets too, because my parents were like, we're not spending $20 on a Tamagotchi. $20.
I mean, $20 was a lot of money in 1997. Like,
$20 would change my life.
All right, let's get back to sports.
Yes. So, you know, we were going to get into the Super Bowl, but really the only question that I have that I think matters is, do we think the Browns could have beat the Buccaneers? Because this year, I was watching this game, I'm
No. So I don't think so. Not this year, just because, like, if you looked at the next gen stats for Tom Brady, he literally never moved out of the pocket. Like, he stayed, like, and not just, like, he wasn't even in, like, the regular pocket. You know that, like, little mini pocket on the inside of your jeans? That's the pocket that he was in. Like, he never moved. And I don't think that our defense would have been able to get through that offensive line to touch him. Like, there's just, they would not have been able to get anywhere near him. And for the way that Gronk was playing, they wouldn't have been able to catch up and stop Gronk either. So I think the Browns' offense was Super Bowl worthy this year. I don't think the Browns would have beaten the Buccaneers because of the defense alone.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, Gronk, Cameron Brait, their running game, and then, oh, you have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin,
yes,
Antonio Brown.
Yes.
We have Denzel Ward and Ronnie Harrison and MJ Stewart. Like, no. It's not going to happen.
No.
It just is what it is. It just is what it is. Like that's why I wasn't upset that we lost against the Chiefs. I'm more upset, like the one our Achilles heel all year was getting off the field on third and fourth down. If we weren't creating turnovers, we weren't getting off the field. And that's exactly what happened. You know, third and long, you give up. You know, I mean, it's just like, third and 14. If you give up 10 yards, they probably punt. But you gave up 14 to make it 4th and inches. And people who said that was a gutsy call, it wasn't. Stop. It was not a gutsy call. You're going to make that. You're going to do that 100 times out of 100. I don't care if you have Chad Henne at quarterback. He could throw a nice little, you know, rollout to the inside slot receiver, to Tyreek Hill. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, they just weren't paying attention. They didn't care. Yeah. Like, I don't want to say they didn't care, but they just weren't paying attention. You know, you had 3rd and 4, and you had a miscommunication, and you let the running back get 5 yards on 3rd and 4, like, a couple plays before. Like, you had multiple 3rd down opportunities to get stops, and you just didn't. Which is why punting on 4th and 9 was smart. You were going up against Chad Henne, not Pat Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Like, stop.
Yes.
It's okay.
100%.
Sorry, yeah. I tend to rant.
Like, I think, you know, I think it's fair to think that the Browns could have made it to the Super Bowl this year. Like, they had the opportunities. Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that the Browns had the ability to get to the Super Bowl this year. You know, there were a few missteps, like Caitlin said, in the Kansas City game that they just couldn't recover from. But yeah, and I'm not saying this because I don't have faith in the Browns. I'm just, knowing the way they've played all season and knowing the way Tom Brady plays and the way the Buccaneers have been playing, I don't think the Browns defense would have been able to stand up to that. And, you know, and I don't want to say that it's not an indictment on the defense, but it is a little bit.
I mean, you're going up against the best quarterback of all time. You're going up against the best NFL. You're going up against the best player of all time. He's the best player.
Not the best drinker.
No. But
he's a lightweight with his avocado tequila.
Listen, I saw that video today and I felt it in my soul. Like, I have been Tom Brady, and that's the only time I've ever, like, compared to Tom Brady in anything.
Brittany,
is that video of him not
Brittany, I'm pretty sure I have carried you out of bars like that before.
It happens.
Okay. It's okay. We don't judge. Like, but I really want to try avocado tequila now. Like,
makes me want to throw up just thinking about it.
Avocado tequila. Oh no, it sounds nasty as shit, but I want to try it because I'm so curious. Like, I need to find a bar somewhere that I can literally just go be like, hey, let me, like, I don't even want a full shot. Just give me, like, a taste. Because I'm like, a full shot would make you puke probably, but I want to know. What
That's
is
probably
going to
be the
tequila.
Name of a play next season.
Was he just memeing?
was
he just memeing though? Is it actually avocado tequila though?
I don't know. Well, that was the video that it probably wasn't him. I don't think he was coherent enough to tweet. I think it was whoever he hired to manage it. Because here's the thing: everyone's like, Tom Brady, he's so good at social media. I think he hired someone to run his Twitter account. I don't think
he's
that's
hilarious.
Him. No,
those
he's
videos
not.
And are so
he
good.
Is not funny. He's
funny.
Lame and he's a dork.
He
no.
is funny in a dad
that's
way,
the
which
funny
is my
part.
Favorite humor. Yes,
I think there is somebody running his Twitter account for him, and that's why it's so good. Like, that's why
his
Twitter
how...
is so good.
Do you know how baller you gotta be to have somebody run your Twitter account and be, like, really, really good? Like, he had that History Channel meme created. Like, that is impressive. to have a meme guy, like, that
you,
is, like,
you
you're
the
goat if you
when
have a
he
meme
tweeted
guy.
That thing? Did you see the other day when he tweeted about the first video game he was in versus the latest one?
Oh, yeah.
And then he quote tweeted that photo of that sketch of him in court.
See,
he
I
was
just
so quick about it too.
See, I just don't think that Tom Brady is creative enough to think of that kind of tweet. That's why I think, because here's the thing, if you look at a lot of the bigger brands that have really good Twitter accounts, like Wendy's and brands like that, who just have so much
Steak-ums?
Fun with each other.
Steak-ums
yeah,
is friggin' woke. Dude, that is awesome.
They hire comedians to run those Twitter accounts. Like, that's not, you know, like, let's pay some social media intern $15 an hour to run. No. Like, these are, like, actual comedians that probably went through Second City in Chicago. Like, that's why these Twitter accounts are so good. I'm convinced that Tom Brady has some struggling actor, actress, writer in Hollywood, comedian like someone who's going to be like a future John Mulaney, but hasn't gotten his break yet. Like that's who's running his Twitter account. Like Tom Brady is not witty enough to come up with that stuff by himself.
I want to not believe you on this. Like you're probably right, but I don't want to believe it.
Are you underestimating Tom Brady? Like people did on Sunday?
He only cares about football and cherry juice. Okay. That's all he cares about. He doesn't, he wants his supplements, his football and his cherry juice. That's the only things that Tom Brady has on his mind. Like, I think he forgets during football season. I think he forgets that he has a wife and children. It was like after the New Orleans game, he's like, oh yeah, that's right. Let me see my son. Hey son. Like he forgets. Cause he's so laser focused on football. That's why he's
married to Giselle and
fine dining and breathing.
Good Lord.
I mean, that's why Tom Brady is so good at what he does, is because he's obsessive about football. That he, like, when you talk about live, eat, breathe football, Tom Brady is that definition. So I don't think that someone who is that laser focused on their career has time for social media. Right. Get that avocado tequila.
Yes. Okay, guys. Before we're done for the evening, we need to have the great debate.
Let me ask you first.
Hold on. Meredith. Mm-hmm. Okay. Earlier today, Twitter posed the question, who was your favorite baseball player from 2005 to 2008?
Oh, my God. Meredith. Probably. Okay.
Miguel Tejada. I'm excited for this.
I loved Miguel Tejada. Like him. Probably Brian Roberts, I would say, were some of my tops from that time, because 2005 to 2008 was a very strange year for me, because so I grew up watching and cheering for and being a diehard fan of the Baltimore Orioles, because they were the closest Major League Baseball team by proximity to where I was, which, you know, Southeast D.C. The Nats didn't come to D.C. until 2005, I believe. So yeah. I had this like trans, and then, you know, and then I went to college. So I wasn't living in DC when, you know, when the Nats were up and coming in the city. And so I had this weird transition, like period from like 2005 to 2010 of wanting to stick with my childhood team, but also realizing like, hey, my home city has a baseball team now. So I probably didn't fully transition over to being an obnoxious Nats fan until probably like 2012. So yeah, like 05 to 08, it was all Baltimore Orioles for me. It was, you know, Brian Roberts, it was Miguel Tejada, like all of them. Like I even like Melvin Mora, and I don't remember why.
I was just
going
to say Melvin Mora.
I just don't remember why I liked
Ponsone.
Melvin Mora. Yes. Oh my God.
And Omar Dahl.
Yes. And then Sammy Sosa was on that team for like 5 minutes too in like 2005.
What?
Yeah, I think so. If I remember correctly, 2005 was a fuzzy year. But yeah, those are my, like, I would say Tejada and B-Rob were like my favorite baseball players from that era. And that's, you know, strictly Baltimore Orioles.
Damn, I thought we were going to talk about the Nats, like their infancy, like Christian Guzman and Jose Vidro and Brad Wilkerson.
I really wasn't like fully transitioned to being 100% a Nats fan. Like I said, like 2000. I think it's because like at the time I was working at the Fan in DC, and I think like that was the year that we got the broadcasting rights for the Nats, and I was like, okay. I mean, I still like low key root for the Orioles sometimes, but honestly, like because I live in Cleveland and because I want to see success for Cleveland teams, like honestly, if it's the Indians versus the Orioles, I'm probably rooting for the Indians. And don't tell my brother that. That will upset him because he never let go of the Orioles. Like still to this day, he's never lived in Baltimore, never lived in Maryland a day in his life, but he is still diehard Orioles fans. But yeah, like modern day, if the Indians are going up against the Orioles, I'm rooting for the Indians more, just because I would much rather see that team have success.
Aww, so nice.
I try.
All right, Caitlin.
Hello, how's it going?
Now, you and I... Okay, so tell everyone who your favorite baseball player was in this era.
Okay, so if I had to pick one player, it had to be Grady Sizemore. I mean, what girl didn't love Grady Sizemore during 2005 to 2008? I mean,
I remember the signs. All-star.
You know, I mean, I was like, in 6th, 7th grade, and, like, every girl loved him. They had Grady's ladies in the bleachers. They had Grady's grannies in the bleachers. Like, everybody loved Grady Sizemore. I mean,
do you remember the signs that said Sizemore matters? I remember those signs.
Oh, I mean, and then, like, let's just be for real. Like, he was a killer player. I mean, for 4 years, he missed 9 games. He went back-to-back 162 in 06 and 07, three-time All-Star. I mean, like, he was in today's MLB, like, he's up there. He'd be up there with, you know, Christian Yelich and Mike Trout to be, you know, defensively. Wow. He was awesome. You know, how do you not know? How do you not? I mean, it's Grady Sizemore. I mean, who do you want me to say? Jody Garrett? Like, I love Jody Garrett. And I guess I have a thing for left-handed hitting outfielders.
I would compare Jody Garrett to Grady Sizemore. I think that's a pretty good comparison.
Because it's Jody Garrett.
Because they both just, like, petered out into nothing.
Yeah, he was at least a three-time All-Star. Like, come on.
Okay, Grady Sizemore was, like, the best of... Well, no. He was, like, the worst of the best five-tool players there ever was. Like, he was great until he wasn't. And then he just disappeared into nothingness because he could never stay healthy.
I think you could blame Eric Wedge for that.
No, it's just he wasn't built for it. He wasn't built to last.
Okay, so is my judgment messed up? Because I'm looking at pictures of Grady Sizemore right now. I just don't think he's that good looking. Like, I feel like that's...
Can you also look at pictures of Victor Martinez, who is the only correct answer here, because not only was he built to last, Caitlin, and he lasted.
Oh, my God.
A long time.
Oh, I'm looking. This is not the baseball player. This is a bodybuilder.
Oh, yeah. Don't look at the bodybuilder. It's very scary.
No wonder Victor Martinez baseball was one of the autocompletes.
Yeah, that bodybuilder is terrifying. Oh, God. That is not Victor Martinez.
I don't see it. I don't see it with him either. Like, because if you're looking at a baseball player that brings in the ladies because of his looks that, like, have the, you know, the Grady's ladies, the Sizemore matters, like, those types of things, like, he's okay looking. Like, he's not ugly, but, you know, he's not Ryan Gosling. Come on.
Listen, there was a Victor's Vixens group, okay? It was me, but it existed.
It was me.
I was the group, but, like, I had a wife beater that said it, and I went to the game, and actually, that game that I went to, it was, like, 2006, and it was right around my graduation of high school. I'm not that old, but I went to the game to, like, celebrate with my friends, and I had my Victor's, and they put me on the screen to do, like, this giveaway for Bed Bath & Beyond. I had to answer questions. Which, I don't know if you guys know this, but sometimes they give you the answers to these questions.
Oh my God, so, do, like, they really?
Know, yeah, like the woman, like, fed me all the answers to it.
Oh my God, so that's kind of awesome, though.
I won all this money that I wouldn't have known anyway, because it was about, like, the price of things at grocery stores, which me at 17 had no idea what anything costs. So, yeah. But no, I got on there and I was like, oh my God, what if Victor sees me? He's going to fall in love with me just right here. Never happened, but... The moral of the story is Victor's Vixen lives on. I am alive still. And I still have that wife beater somewhere.
I was about to say, do we need to call Jenna and get her to make you a Victor's Vixen's shirt?
Best time of my life.
Part of the Cleveland retro series.
Oh my gosh.
Invent the Beleza and Style Etsy shop.
But anyway, the bottom line is he's
attractive. I could see why you were in love with Victor Martinez. Like, he's still in love
with Victor Martinez. There's no was. I will be in love with Victor Martinez till the day I die.
He's got that look about him. So you remember, you guys have seen The Sandlot, right?
Yes.
Of course. Like, it's the greatest baseball movie of all time. But, like, when I was little, probably, like, fifth or sixth grade, and I was just starting to realize that, like, boys existed, I had the biggest crush on Benny the Jet Rodriguez, like the young version, when I was like 10. Like, I'm getting Benny the Jet vibes from these pictures of Victor Martinez when he was with the Indians.
Thank you. That's, like, the best compliment you could ever give a man, Benny the Jet Rodriguez.
those are the vibes I'm getting.
I love it. So, yeah. So I think I won the debate. I don't know how debates are scored, Oh, they would just scream at each other and nobody wins. And that's exactly the debate in America, I think.
I literally just watched the debate episode of Community 2 yesterday.
Oh my God,
man, man is good. Man is good.
Man is good. Man is evil.
That's like what this feels like right now.
Yes, that's it. All right. So I think that will be it.
Did you have one more question for Caitlin?
I do, but I don't know if I want to get into it now just because we've been doing this for like an hour now and I wanted to keep it a little bit shorter.
Sure. Okay. Well, that just means that, Caitlin, if we didn't scare you off, please come back.
I want to have like a whole episode about this whole thing, I think, sometime soon.
Did I scare you guys off? That's really the question.
Never. Caitlin, I don't want this to sound weird or anything, but I love arguing with you. It is so much fun.
Well, isn't it the best? Because nobody ever gets mad.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's what's good about it. Yeah. Like, we can go back and forth and nobody ever gets mad about it.
Well, because everybody...
imagine.
Well, because everybody has valid points, you know, and everyone's arguments are rooted in fact, and that's what happens. You know, when you have well-thought-out arguments, nobody gets mad because everybody respects each other.
Well, that, and it's like, it's nothing's ever that serious, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like you have an argument, but, like, you know, you crack a joke in between, so it's like, what are you going to do, get mad at a joke? Like, I don't know.
You're going to get mad at Grady's ladies?
Yeah, exactly.
is your gang going to come after mine, Caitlin? Is Grady's ladies going to charge you?
Look, I'm just saying, like, he was the best player on the Indians at that time, so... Like, he was my favorite.
He was. There's no doubt. Like, as far as, like, 5-2, like, he was. He was exceptional.
Like, really, you know, my favorite players are Jody Garrod, Sizemore, I guess, Michael Brantley, Tyler Naquin. Again, I guess I have something for left-handed hitting outfielders. I don't know.
Caitlin has a type.
I only like Hispanic players, so how's that? I like Victor. Victor's my favorite. Fausto was one of my favorites, obviously.
Who? Oh,
excuse me! How dare you?
You mean Roberto Hernandez
for
radio
forever? How dare you? I will hang up right now. But yeah, so I think that about does it. We're gonna have Caitlin back to talk about something very important that was originally on the rundown, but I kind of want Bree here for this one too.
Yes,
the more I think
for sure.
About it, because I think it's something that we sort of touched on in our women in sports thing, but, you know, we want to get more into it within the next couple of weeks. So, Caitlin, we want you to come back on soon if you're down with that.
Yes. Anytime. I'm ready to, you know, play left field or right field or whatever.
Oh, you're ready to be our Grady Sizemore? Is that what you're saying?
No. Like I said, you know, the super utility player, or am I just the matchup righty? Am I Rafael Betancourt? Like,
oh, now you're tugging at my heartstrings, Rafi and Rafi Perez. Remember him?
Rafi Perez. Am I part of the bullpen mafia? Is this what we're doing?
God, I think that's exactly what it is. Yeah, you know what? I think that's perfect. You are
getting nostalgic.
You
are, but I'm like not one
mafia.
Of the good ones. I'm like Jeremy Ricardo or something. You know, Dan Wheeler.
I think for, like, I want to say you're only our second repeat guest on the podcast. Like, we've had Cammy on more than once, and you're the only other person that we've had on more than once, so.
Yes, and we're going to have her on a third time in the next, you know, couple episodes.
You know, and Cammy's always going to come back because she's, you know, she's one of our ladies, so, yeah. Yes. Whether you like it or not, Caitlin, you're one of our ladies too. Sorry. Yeah.
Sounds like a good, you know, business decision to add me to the group.
Heck yeah. You're already in the group. Stop it. You are one of us.
One of us.
All right, ladies. So that wraps it up. Thank you everyone for listening. We're available on Spotify, Apple. Sorry, Bree usually does this, so I'm not very good at it.
It's okay.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, we're there. Share, retweet, write a review. We don't get a lot of reviews, so write one of those, please. Like, even if we stink, just let us know. You could actually don't do that.
Okay, so if you I've said this
if
before.
If you hate us, just be nice anyway.
I think you can find the address for our PO box on our website, girlgangcle.com. So if you want to send hate mail, the only way we accept hate mail is handwritten letters sent through the U.S. Postal Service. So that's how you can send us hate mail. The PO box is on our website. And then if you want to write a review, you can do that on Apple iTunes. I believe you can also do that on Spotify. And yeah, our Twitter account, right? It's what, at GirlGangCLE as well?
Yes, and that's where I will be tweeting this link out tomorrow because my Twitter is currently deactivated, so I will be using GirlGangCLE.
There you go.
All right, goodbye, everyone.
Talk to you next week.